for certain groups of employees, and I don't think that sets well with the public, nor do I think that's prudent at this time. So I vote no against tabling it.
Leonard?
Well, I'm not sure I quite understand the characterization of administrative employees who happen to be mostly women as some lofty discussion. That hits me wrong. And it isn't a 7% raise. It's those who happen to be within the salary range and haven't topped out that it impacts. So it's a distinct group of people that aren't even all non-represented people. That by itself is patently unfair. But let's acknowledge what is accurate, and Commissioner Fritz is right. This is a crisis. We're in an economic crisis. It isn't inconsistent that this morning I proposed a resolution wherein I asked the managers, along with myself at the Bureau of Development Services, to take a two-week unpaid furlough with my position here. That's not inconsistent at all. I think it's very consistent. We're managing the crisis within that bureau as we are supposed to do. But there's a danger in crises, whether they're fires, whether they're earthquakes, whether they're economic crises, to actually overreact to the extent that you create more problems than you're solving. And yes, the school district has problems. And yes, Multnomah County has problems. And yes, the state of Oregon has problems. And yes, the federal government has problems. But to use those problems to justify what we have to deal with here in the city of Portland is inappropriate. We are balancing our budget. We went through our budget process. We know what our resources are, and we're spending them prudently, and we're taking actions, as we did this morning at the Bureau of Development Services, to manage our resources within our means. And to use that as a reason, the economic crisis, to unfairly impact a small group of employees is just patently unfair, and it is not something I can or ever will support. Aye.
Fritz.
I proposed this, and I still believe it's a benefit. It's proposed as a benefit to non-represented employees to take a little bit from or not give the raise so that we could save those jobs. And so the same arguments that could be used against it are actually part of my reason for it, that we do want to save those lower classification non-represented jobs who might be the most at risk in the next budget. One of the reasons that we had one-time money this year is because the bureaus all started cutting at Mayor Adams's direction in January. And so people started getting laid off, as Commissioner Leonard laid out this morning. And so it seems to me, yes, we've balanced the budget for the next year, and we're pretty sure, in fact, the OMF's own managers already know that the funding for next year in business income taxes is likely to go down $10 million. So it seems to me prudent to plan ahead and to put this money aside, and if it's not needed, then we can award it to eligible employees as it's their money. Otherwise, it saves their jobs. And so I'm very disappointed to hear that there isn't support on the council for considering, for looking ahead. No.
Adams.
I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for bringing this issue forward again. She did raise it in terms of an potential impact of cost savings in the budget process. The mayor's proposed budget, and this is less a budget saving proposal than a position saving proposal. So let's be clear about that.
Right.
The rhetoric, the evaluation of our actions here turns into other types of rhetoric, which can easily sort of distort the original intent.
Thank you.
We, in this budget, the cuts that we had to make, and in some cases we overcut, to expand service offerings among to those that are feeling the hardship most, small businesses, our youth, folks impacted by homelessness or lack of affordable housing. About 60%, just shy of 60% of our cuts were to administrative costs of the city, according to the Bureau of Financial Planning. We're going to likely be looking at this for the next fiscal year because of the nature of the national recession. I hope not, but I think likely we will be. And I would like to take, and the budget process, the budget process in the mayor's office actually begins within the next, 45 days. So I think, and Commissioner Fritz has made changes to her original resolution at my request, and I do appreciate those and for the conversation. But as I've sat with this issue, I have become increasingly aware that because the city has a lot of administrative staff that are classified as non-represented, they're not managers, they're not making a lot of money. And as the commissioner in charge of transportation, where we've been cutting for 6 years, not just this year, I'm mindful that we are asking the folks that are left to work harder and smarter and better and longer hours than ever before. So I'm going to support the measure to postpone, knowing that we will take this up as for consideration in putting together next year's budget. And my goal would be that these kinds of measures would apply to all employees, employee groups within the city of Portland. So aye. Motion is approved. That moves us to council calendar item, the 2 o'clock certain, 907, which is a non-emergency ordinance. Can you please read the title for council calendar item, time certain, 2 o'clock, 907?
Establish a new original art mural regulatory and permitting program.
Okay. This is an issue that I worked on when I was a staffer to Mayor Vera Katz. That's how long this issue has been going on. And frustrating, this is another one of those frustrating issues that has had many twists and turns. For those of us that want to see more murals, more arts and culture, more public arts and culture in this city, and who wants to provide as many opportunities for muralists and artists to be able to do their work within the city. This has been a very frustrating issue that Mayor Katz worked on, Mayor Potter worked on, and I'm pleased as the Arts Commissioner and as the Commissioner in charge of planning and sustainability to help sort of bring it home in terms of the best providing the best possible solution we collectively have been able to come up with in the midst of a thicket of really difficult legal sort of constraints. I want to thank the Regional Arts and Cultural Council for their work in this process. You really picked up the ball and ran with it, and I'm very grateful for that. I want to thank the Muralist Working Group for your patience. I know you're not lawyers, and your patience in dealing with some of the legal issues has been amazing. So we're going to hear some of the details of why we're proposing what we're proposing. This is a non-emergency. We'll take testimony and move forward. Sir.
Thank you, Mayor Adams, Commissioners. My name is Eric Engstrom. I'm here representing the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I'm very pleased to be bringing this legislation forward to create what I think is another pathway for artistic expression in the city. With me here is Phil Nameny, who is going to give a presentation about the details. We also have in the room Tracy Reeves from the City Attorney's Office, who was involved in the details of this, given the legal issues surrounding it. Douglas Hardy from the Bureau of Development Services also, we appreciate their work on working out the logistics of how these things would be permitted and exactly how that would be done in BDS. And as you mentioned, there are folks from RAC and then muralists who are in the room and will be speaking to you as well. So with that, I'll turn it over to Phil.
Hi, Phil Nameny from Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And actually, I'm going to, Carla, I think, needed to go upstairs to get the packet of material for you. But I do have copies of the PowerPoint presentation. If you guys would like copies, I can hand those out.
Great.
You know, after the 4.5 hour hearing last night and the 4.5 hours today, I think if you turned off the lights for a PowerPoint, there might be a number of us who we're setting a new record for a 24-hour cycle. This the mayor wants to wear us out.
I will say that unlike some zoning code legislation, we have a lot of pictures in this one.
Okay.
You know your audience, don't you?
You do have, okay. Okay. Well, I think Eric kind of went ahead and went over some of the introductory stuff. As he mentioned, we do have many other folks that were part of our stakeholder team that will be here and can answer questions if you have relative to their expertise. So I'm going to go ahead and go over one of the reasons why we're here. Some of you have been around long enough to know the long and litigious history that murals have had in Portland. I'm going to surmise just some of the key points and historical moments to bring the current project into context. First, I'd like to review how we used to regulate murals up until about 10 years ago. As you'll see through the slides, the 1998 date does have importance. And I'm going to use an existing mural that has been around for a long time to help illustrate how murals have been treated over the years. Some of you may recognize this mural. It's actually near the corner of Division and 12th on a building that actually is just undergoing some remodeling. Prior to 1991, this mural would have been considered a painted wall decoration and exempted from the sign regulations. There wouldn't have been any permit required to put up the mural, and a mural such as this one could be put up without any city oversight at that time. During the time from 1991 to 1998, the zoning code was clarified to enlarge the definition of signs. The definition of signs was extended to include text, logos, trademarks, or numbers, and murals basically were defined by the absence of those items. So without any of those features, then a mural would have been still exempt from the limitations of the sign code. Now, in context of this particular sign, or I'm sorry, this mural, this actually probably would have been considered a sign between 1991 and 1998 because it did have text in the body of the image. And that is something that's kind of ironic and shows kind of how things have shifted over time. However, if this mural did not have the corresponding text, it would have been considered a painted wall decoration and still exempt and unregulated. So you can probably gather from this that this distinction relied on a review of the content of the image. And this distinction basically came back to bite the city later. However, while that was while the city had that distinction, there was a mural community that maybe didn't necessarily flourish, but did result in several murals created during that time. This one illustrates the commemoration of the 1948 Vanport flood. Unfortunately, the freedom to do these murals was based on a zoning code that was liable to attack. And this came to a head in 1998. Over the years, even back into the late 80s, while the city distinguished between signs and painted wall decorations, AK Media, which is now owned by Clear Channel, had questioned the city's regulations and their distinction between images of murals and the images of signs. They claimed that the exemption was unconstitutionally content-based. The courts agreed in 1998, and this forced the city to address its unconstitutional sign code. The choices were either to abandon our sign regulations or to remove the distinction from murals and treat them as signs in the future. Reluctantly, the city chose the second path in November of 1998. And so since then, murals have been subject to the same size and placement restrictions as signs. Murals and other wall signs that existed at that time were considered non-conforming signs and grandfathered in. So going back to our banana mural, at the point after that decision was made, this was grandfathered in as a non-conforming sign, and any changes to it or increases in size would have been subject to sign permit requirements. I want to kind of give a little bit of background on the legal basis for the lawsuit. Although the lawsuit at the time invoked both the federal and the Oregon Constitution, it's worthy to point out that the Oregon Constitution does have a stricter regulation over speech than the federal Constitution. Although the federal Constitution does allow some latitude in regulating commercial speech, there can be no distinction between the regulation of commercial and non-commercial speech per Oregon law. I'm going to show a couple examples of attempts to do murals within the guidelines of the sign ordinance. This was an example off of Southeast Foster at a restaurant. Under the sign ordinance, by right, all they could do was that middle panel above. They had to apply for a land use review to ask for an adjustment to the sign regulations in order to complete the mural and do the other two panels. Another example that some of you may be familiar with is the Mirador community store. In this case, a mural was put up, but there was a complaint to the Bureau of Development Services, and in researching the complaint, they were required to ask the murador to reduce the size of the mural to fit within the sign regulations. As a result, the area there that is behind sort of the yellow painted garage doors is still part of the mural, but has to be covered at this point because it does exceed the sign limitations. In 2005, Mayor Katz, at the end of the term, who had been involved in a lot of the litigation with this, worked with her staff to try to come up with a partial solution. Through this, she worked with the Regional Arts and Culture Commission and the Bureau of Planning to come up with a program where murals could be included in the city's public art program. One of the features of this program is that if a mural was not actually placed on city-owned property, the city would get an easement so that they could have access to the wall. And it's from that, it could be part of the public art collection. I want to go over a couple of the features that have been part of the RAC process. The RAC process is a formal way for muralists to achieve city approval to paint a mural, and this is something that hadn't been attainable since 1998. The program includes a funding allowance for the murals since they ultimately become part of the city's public art collection. And the murals are reviewed by the Public Arts Commission, who judge it based upon artistic merit, community support, feasibility, and other factors. The program has actually resulted in over 25 murals created since its implementation at the beginning of 2005, and I've been told also there's several still in the pipeline that are probably going to get painted up this summer. I wanted to show a few images of some of the murals that have been able to get approved through this program. One of the first ones was a mural done as part of the scrap store that was placed on North Williams. In this case, a blank wall along Southeast Hawthorne at the Hawthorne Auto Clinic was turned into a mural sort of featuring the Hawthorne area. This one is a little different in that it was a series of panels painted and then hung on a building in North Portland at the Albina Press Cafe. Other things that this program has been used for is for partnering with other groups. In this case, RAC partnered with homeless youth to create a mural along a retaining wall along the light rail turnaround there in downtown Portland. And the RAC process has been able to get used for many community murals. This one is one of the most recently completed murals, and actually Commissioner Fritz and also a representative of Mayor Adams' office were there at the ribbon cutting. There's also been community murals approved through the RAC process in Concordia, Wilshire, and Sunnyside neighborhoods. So overall, the RAC process has been a successful program, but it's also the only option for larger murals to be able to be legally installed in the city. And because of the way it's laid out, it does lead to some issues. Some are that the RAC program is not a regulatory program. Its intent is really to provide avenues for city investment in public art and its art collection. The program is not as effective when its funding isn't required, and the formal RAC overview and hearing can discourage certain community-based projects. Also, some of the standards for this have yet to be developed to apply the programs in areas of historic significance, although we are working on that currently. So I want to just kind of reiterate sort of the legal landscape that we're working under before launching into the proposed mural program. In 1998, the court did make it very clear that the legal landscape is one where the city cannot regulate content, but the city can regulate the physical size and location of murals and signs. However, a recent court ruling from an appeal of the long-running case provided the opportunity for the city to consider a different way to regulate. This could be done based upon the media application and the materials. So, for example, the city could look at something that was painted directly on the wall by hand differently than something that is mass-produced and glued onto the wall. In addition, as part of this new regulating, a new process could be created. This is what led us to begin considering a new program distinguishable from the other regulatory programs. So some of the things we were considering when we were developing this program, and there was several meetings over 2008 with different bureau staff and mural artists, as well as the city attorney and members of RAC. Some of the items we looked at was what type of application should we allow? such as painting and tiling on the wall versus other methods. As I mentioned earlier, the state law does not allow us to regulate commercial and non-commercial speech differently. So it is important to note that the mural program could be used to illustrate commercial activities such as those going inside a building. We were looking at ways potentially to determine whether there's certain situations where that's okay or whether that should be further defined. And as a result, we've come up with some regulations to and restrictions in design overlay zones and in other sensitive areas. Another item we looked at was whether we should try to control height of these murals. As I mentioned before, a lot of the community-based murals are often at a more pedestrian scale, lower to the ground, and not necessarily high up on a building. And the thought was that perhaps to encourage community-based murals, maybe we should have a height limit that applies to these. So balancing all that, we've come up with a proposed mural process. And in that process, we're creating a brand new title, which is Title 4 for original art murals, and that'll be separate from the sign code. And that title will provide basic direction for original art murals. This will complement the existing RAC public art mural program. The code will be supplemented by administrative rules, which I'll describe further. And we are defining murals as hand-produced works of art that are tiled or painted directly upon or fixed directly to a wall. And we understand that this may limit certain applications, but we wanted to take sort of a conservative approach to begin with to determine its success.
Is there any problem with using the term work of art in the definition? Doesn't that enter in an element of discretion or opinion?
Well, the definition that could, although then basically as long as it's hand applied and hand painted, that'll be the determining aspect of it. So I don't know. That is something that we worked with our city attorney on quite a bit, and she seemed comfortable with using that term. I don't think it is going to lead to somebody on the permit counter deciding whether something's art or not.
Do you want to? Our city attorney is here. Do you want to answer that? Yeah. You can. You have to step forward, sir. Please introduce yourself.
Tracy Reeve from the city attorney's office. In terms of the definition, we are really going on objective criteria, and by saying an original work of art, we're catching the original element, which is what we were just discussing, that it has to be hand-produced. We're identifying the media that can be used. And the intention is not, I think the intention in using the term an original work of art is to define it as this is what we want, but then the legally determining whether or not something meets that, we're going to look at those objective elements of is it hand-created and is it, directly put onto the wall using those media.
So there could be a hand-produced, painted, majorly a big sign that would advertise a business that would count as a work of art?
Yes.
Okay.
Other than something that I might create at home, what was not a work of art?
As I say, I don't think that the work of art piece of it is going to be the distinguishing characteristic.
Okay. Thank you.
So in other words, you could go and, if you owned a business, you could go ahead and paint your own work of art on the side of the wall if you like.
So work of art is illustrative. It's intended to...
I think work of art is indicative of... The originality element, I think, is something that we're going to be looking at. Is it hand-produced? Is it an original? Is it being originally created? Is it not a mass-produced vinyl being plastered on the wall? The work of art piece is not going to be a separate approval criterion apart from those other criteria that we've discussed.
So if there's a similar large hand-painted sign that... in another place in the city or somewhere else, then it's not an original piece of art?
No, we're not using, we've defined original work of art, and the way that we've defined it in the code, the originality really goes to the method of production at that site. We did actually look quite carefully at whether we could use originality, say, under the copyright law and draw that into the code. And because of how strictly the Oregon Supreme Court interprets their content, what content-based to mean, which is more strictly than the U.S. Supreme Court interprets it, I frankly felt that that was just skirting too close to the content issue under the Supreme Court's most recent billboard case, and we determined that we were not going to use originality in the sense of distinct from something else that it's used under copyright law.
Thank you. Bill?
Okay, moving forward. Just last little bit on this part. Basically, a mural that is approved through this non-discretionary process would be exempt from the sign and the zoning codes. I'm going to try to run through relatively quickly the various mural code requirements and administrative rules. We did create some basic standards for the murals. Some of these include that the mural remain in place for 5 years. This is to encourage permanent installations and discourage rotating advertising.
So it's remain in place for 5 years unchanged?
Correct.
Okay.
Also, we have a limit that the mural be limited to 30 feet high, or potentially it could be lower in design overlay zones. There's a separate measurement in design overlay zones. This is to encourage murals to relate more to the pedestrian community level and less to long-distance visibility. We have a condition that the owner not get revenue from displaying the mural on an ongoing basis. We have additional limitations that apply in sensitive design areas. We also have a requirement that the program only be allowed on what is known as non-contributing structures in historic or conservation areas and prohibited on any historic or conservation landmarks. Now, this was something that actually was discussed quite a bit at Planning Commission and was a recommendation of the Planning Commission. I do want to note that the staff originally had suggested that this not be used at all in historic areas, but there was a testimony at the Planning Commission that it may be okay to be used on non-contributing structures in historic and conservation districts. But that is someplace we may have some testimony today on.
And what was the Planning Commission's reason for overruling the Landmarks Commission on that recommendation?
The testimony was their discussion and their decision was based upon testimony that generally non-contributing structures on their own don't necessarily contribute to the significance of that historic or conservation district. They don't necessarily have a value on their own. Some of the discussion that may occur is, you know, how those buildings relate to the overall district. But they were swayed by the argument that as a building on its own, the idea is, say, in the Alphabet Historic District, if there's a Les Schwab Tire Center built in 1975, that building, of course, did not really add anything to the historic nature of the historic district. And so they went with that argument.
No offense to Les Schwab.
Exactly. Any building built in 1975 is not going to be historic.
Can you just also just very briefly explain why there can be no revenue stream?
The no revenue stream is in there solely because it's not to keep the idea of if you hire a muralist to paint on your wall, you can obviously compensate them. It's a prohibition against the ongoing revenue that a building owner may receive from somebody paying that building owner to, in essence, advertise on the wall. So it's a way to sort of discourage billboard-type advertising. So in other words, Budweiser couldn't come in and say, I'll give you $1,000 a month if you let me paint a Budweiser mural on the wall. It's something that has also been used at the state level, and Tracy may be able to add to this, but it was something that was also looked at the state level in their new regulations for trying to distinguish between billboard off-site advertising and on-site advertising.
I'm an up-and-coming artist, and I want to paint a mural, but I also want to get some attention. So and you could do lots of things with that particular space, so I throw you $1,000 a year so that I can have my mural there, and I hope to get a lot of attention. It has a picture of Obama on it, and it says hope, and it's going to be broadcast all over the world, so I'm going to give you $1,000. Why do we care about that?
Are you saying $1,000 on an ongoing basis or $1,000 just to paint it?
Maybe it's $1,000 a year just because it's space that there's maybe a lost opportunity, or maybe I'm an artist that's particularly entrepreneurial.
If I could take a crack at it. It's we are not allowed to regulate content. So if somebody was paid, if a muralist was paid to paint an original mural that was commercial in nature, that would be allowed as long as the building owner didn't get monthly or regular revenue stream from having that advertisement on the side of their property. So it's a non-content way, it's a non-content tool for the city to legally have some shape to where murals, what murals are as we define them, and where they might go or stay.
But if Nick Fish wanted to put a sign, an original mural on the side of a building that said Nick Fish for City Council, and he's willing to pay somebody to do that, but the owner of the building said, I won't let you do that because the state won't allow me to do it and get money, and I don't want your name on the side of my building unless I get a lot of money.
It's not personal.
Can Nick argue that his freedom of expression has been limited by the state?
The state being the
code in this case.
Right. There's certainly always a potential argument. And
can I just finish that thought? And the reason I ask that is, Tracy, you may be aware that very issue, the donations to candidates and whatnot, have been defined by the Supreme Court in Oregon as freedom of expression, and then limiting that is a violation of what you've acknowledged is the broadest. You said that the Supreme Court was broader than the U.S. Supreme Court. The Constitution of the State of Oregon First Amendment freedom of speech provision is broader than the U.S. Constitution, and it's been interpreted
Correct.
To mean that. So is there some chance that that provision could be somehow caught up in that restriction?
You know, this is a difficult area of law, both under Oregon law and under federal law. In the amount of time that I've been working on these issues, which I think is about as long as Mayor Adams, there's been a lot of litigation on both the federal front and the state front. So I'm not going to tell you that any regulation in this area is free from legal risk, and this one isn't. We have tried to design it, you know, to the best extent possible to meet the dictates of both the Oregon Constitution and the federal Constitution. I think that's certainly an argument that could be made, but because it...
Why do we care? I guess I'm trying to... What's the purpose for that limitation on a property owner?
There's two purposes, really. One is, frankly, to attempt to filter out rotating paid commercial advertising on a content-neutral basis. That is to say, to get at a characteristic of that kind of advertising that isn't based on the content of the advertising, which is that somebody pays to put it up there. And as Phil mentioned, the state is using this distinction after the on-premise, off-premise distinction between billboards was declared unconstitutional, which is what the state used to regulate billboards along the freeway. They've gone to this same criterion where they say, if you don't pay for the display of the billboard, which means it's basically an on-premise billboard, you don't need a permit, and if you do pay, then you do need a permit. So the purpose is twofold. One is to try to filter out some of that, the rotating type, not the necessarily the mural type advertisement that a business would want to have on their premises, but the more frequently changing images of whatever product you can think of. We all know what those are. The other purpose is that there was testimony at the last go-round of the trial, and the muralists are here can speak to this more, but that if the larger walls become a commodity that's paid for, the muralists will be priced out of the market because the commercial advertisers will buy all of the useful wall space that would be desirable for murals, and the muralists can't afford to do that at the rate that the commercial advertisers could. So the secondary purpose of it is to try to have a playing field where muralists aren't priced out of the market of our scheme to allow murals.
Well, I just want to say from my point of view that I now get it. I understand the argument, and I understand how you're trying to zig and zag through the legal quagmire, so I appreciate a very clear answer on that.
Quagmire is a good description. Phil?
Okay, back to the PowerPoint. The one other item on this I did want to mention about the proposed mural code is we have placed a neighborhood contact requirement within the code, and I do have a slide later on to go over that in more detail. In conjunction with the code that we've created, the Bureau of Development Services is working to create some administrative rules that will provide the details of the application process, and that was included as the appendix in your exhibit. The administrative rule includes the steps necessary to satisfy the neighborhood involvement process. That will include a posting and informative meeting. Administrative rule also include the location of location of the specific design standards that are applicable design overlay zones and in historic areas. Administrative rule provides information on inspections, alterations, and the removal process for murals. I also want to just mention briefly that as part of the application, there are going to be fees which are going to be used to cover the costs of processing the mural permit. Currently, the fees are set at $250 for a basic mural permit. If a mural is proposed in a design overlay zone, it would be an additional $150 to review against those standards. And then lastly, if a mural does involve something that structurally alters the building, there may need to be a structural review, and there would be have to be a charge to make sure the wall doesn't fall down if they put those structural elements on the side of the wall. I'm going to go over some of the additional design standards.
Phil, that only relates to structural elements, right? Not paint?
Correct, yeah. That would be, for example, there could be a situation, a certain type of a tiling.
Sure.
Or if they hang actual physical panels or something that have a weight.
But we're making the distinction on the application so that not everyone has to go through a structural review.
No. Okay. So if it's a painted mural and it's not in a design overlay zone, it's going to be a $250 permit. I'm going to quickly go over some of the design standards that apply in design overlay zones and on the non-contributing buildings in the historic and conservation districts. Some of these include that basically the mural not obscure architectural details, that the mural not be placed on unpainted brick or stone or other materials that may have been approved through a design review. The mural is also subject to additional height and placement standards. And then the mural should not, also the one other thing is we are going to only allow one mural permit per wall in design overlay zones. Now the mural itself could have multiple parts to it, but we're only going to approve one mural permit per wall, and this would apply in the design overlay areas. I also want to go over the neighborhood outreach. This is something that we've set up to kind of allow the neighborhood to get some information about the mural as it's being proposed. The applicant will have to notify both the neighborhood association and district coalitions of the proposal and invite them to a meeting. The site would also have to be posted with the information 21 days before the meeting is to be held. One thing to note, though, although the applicant's not required to incorporate a neighborhood's comments into the design, our hope with this process is that the neighborhood's input will help, especially in the case of a business owner or other person who's concerned about the thoughts of the surrounding neighborhood. It would give them the opportunity to incorporate some of their ideas or concerns into that. I just want to reiterate the city cannot impose any restrictions on the mural content, but we feel the community could affect the mural in other ways, such as boycotting the business and so on, if they really felt strongly about that. And then once that neighborhood outreach is done and the other standards are met, then the mural would be approved.
The neighborhood contact requirement?
The neighborhood contact requirement, the actual details of the neighborhood contact requirement are in the appendix under the administrative rule. I can get you a page number here. It's on page 42 and 43 of the draft.
Shouldn't there be some reference to it in the code?
I believe in Title 4. Let me see here. I guess we don't have it in the title, do we?
Douglas, do we have it?
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's actually on page 35. There's an establishment of neighborhood involvement process for permits.
But it's not in the code.
That's Title 4.
What section?
4.30.010. And it's a neighborhood involvement process. Chapter 4.30, which is just one item, is a neighborhood involvement process.
Thank you.
And basically, it that just allows the Bureau of Development Services to adopt through administrative rules, and then the administrative rules have the detail on that. And it should be on there's a couple documents we have. One is the full document, and then there's a smaller I guess we're sort of calling it Exhibit 1A. That was just a 3 or 4 page document that had some administrative changes that were required by the city auditors, but didn't change necessarily any of the content.
So I have a couple of questions.
Commissioner Fish.
First of all, thank you for an excellent PowerPoint.
Well, I'm not quite done yet.
Oh,
it's your last slide.
I guess. Would you like me? I've got about 2 more slides, and then
you can roll it on quickly.
Quickly, I just want to remind the council that this is going to be a non-discretionary process, and the only requirement will be getting the mural permit. It's not intended to be a land use review. It's based on meeting a set of standards. The permit will be reviewed by planners and technicians with BDS and the Permit Center, and the requirements in the design overlay zones are standards and cannot be negotiated. And once again, once the neighborhood involvement is satisfied, the permit will be issued.
Okay. Why don't you go through all this quickly?
Okay. Planning Commission, in their official capacity, can only make recommendations on land use titles. So as a result, they do approve, recommend approving amendments to Title 32 and 33, which are the sign code and the zone code. However, they did look at the complete program and making their suggestions. And so they also do suggest that the council approve Titles 3 and the new Title 4 and direct BDS to approve the administrative rules. And also, they felt it was important for staff to continue to work with RAC and the Landmarks Commission to establish a RAC public art process in areas of historic significance in addition to this piece. And then finally, because this is a new program, they suggested that we monitor the program for effectiveness and to look at the results. So quickly, we're here at City Council today. What we're hoping is that there's a second reading on July 1st. Provided that happens, BDS does have an open house and a hearing for administrative to go over the administrative rules on July 13th, and potentially this could be up and running. I put August 1st, but it would probably be the Monday after, which I think is the 3rd or 4th.
Thank you, Phil. Commissioner Fish.
Thank you for an excellent PowerPoint. The 2 questions. First, have we heard any objections from any of the commercial sign owners?
Actually, we have not heard anything from any of the commercial sign owners or in any of the sign companies, actually.
Are they aware of what we're doing?
They have, I believe. We did notify folks that were involved in the original public art mural process back in 2005, and that included several of the sign companies. And also, from what we gathered, I know that it was either the Portland Tribune or the Oregonian, as part of their reporting, actually went and talked to some of the sign companies, and they didn't really have any comment at that time.
So specifically, Clear Channel, that I understand still has some active litigation. Have they provided us with any comments?
They have not.
And my second question relates to one of your slides, which I guess relates to the design overlay zones in historic districts. And I think the picture you had in the slide was of what is now the back half of the new Mercy Corps building, if I'm not mistaken. I understand the Landmarks Commission objects generally to allowing murals in historic districts. I'm hoping we'll hear from Art DeMuro later, but could you just set up the dispute for us?
Yeah, I could. And actually, the photo was from a previous PowerPoint, and I was hoping to find a building in a historic area that was like a 1970s tire store with maybe a historic building behind it or something, but was not able to locate that in the amount of time. So actually, this building would likely, if it's a contributing structure, which I'm pretty sure it probably is a contributing structure to the Skidmore Fountain Historic District, a mural would not get built put on that specific building. But what you're probably going to hear in terms of the discussion on that is the fact that I think there is, amongst folks in the historic community, there is a thought that if you're in a historic district or a conservation district, and the main difference between those is a conservation district is one that has local significance. Historic district may have, you know, state or national significance. But the feeling is even if you're looking at a mural on a building that doesn't contribute directly to that district, that in the concept of the review of the entire district, that mural can have an effect on the surrounding buildings and the atmosphere and so on of that district. So I think that's probably what the context of the argument is going to be. I don't want to put words in Art's mouth because I would like him to come up and testify.
I'll let him think about the answer. Weren't there murals at the time on the many of these buildings? In the old photographs, I see murals, mostly commercial content, on a lot of these buildings when they were constructed. So I'm sure Art will be able to speak to that. Any other discussion with this staff panel? I want to thank you. How many people have signed up?
We have 10 people.
Okay. We have a time certain at 3 o'clock. Many of you have waited a decade to get here. So let's begin.
First three, please come on up, are Joe Cotter, Bruce Fife, and Joanne Olesnik.
Mr. Cotter, welcome. Thank you. I remember sitting down with you a long time ago.
Long time ago.
I don't think your beard was gray then.
I had more hair up here, too. Yeah.
Well, glad you're here.
Thank you. My name is Joseph Cotter. I'm a mural artist. I've painted several pieces in Portland. I live in Eagle Creek, but I've worked in the city on and off for almost 30 years. I've been involved in this from the beginning. First of all, I want to thank the City Council for taking this issue up. It's been a long haul, as we all know. It's been a really long haul. And I want to thank all the supporters. We got a whole lot of letters from people from around the country. There's a lot of other mural programs and people. We've got letters from the Diego Rivera Foundation in Mexico, the Philadelphia Mural Arts Program, and letters from Los Angeles. There's people watching Portland because what's happening here and what happened with the litigation is also possibly happening in other places. It actually is happening in Los Angeles. So what we do here is extremely important, not just for the city of Portland, but for the state of Oregon and for the national situation as well. I'm urging the City Council to pass the recommended original art murals project as is, including the provision that murals be allowed on non-contributing buildings in historic districts. As a person who was in the stakeholders meetings and the earlier meetings, also in the earlier RAC process discussions and involved in the trial as well as an intervener, we didn't actually bring this forward ourselves. We were more or less willing to accept the fact that RAC was going to negotiate something with the Landmarks Commission. However, it's been 4 years since that was actually going on 5 years. Well, 4 years anyway, since that was put into effect, that they were supposed to negotiate something, and nothing's happened. And I know they're in the process now, maybe, but non-contributing buildings do not have historic significance, even though they're contained within a historic district, and was felt by on the Planning Commission, the Design Commission, and members of the public were the ones who made it really clear that, and we've provided several examples to the stakeholders and others in the city, that places such as Quebec that are, 300-year-old city has murals in their historic districts. Other places have Philadelphia, place that has over 2,800 murals, many of them in the historic areas. So I would just urge that they consider that. And I also urge that RAC and the Landmarks Commission be able to work out whatever they have to allow them on, for instance, like the Haas mural, which is on a landmark. Other than that, I just want to thank everybody. I hope that you can pass this, and I'm really looking forward to it. And thank you.
You've been great. I don't know how you have time to paint. You've been so involved in this issue.
I don't have as much as I'd like.
Yes, thank you, sir.
Bruce Fife, president of the American Federation of Musicians, Local 99. And our building is the proud recipient of a city-owned mural. We eased the side of our building to the city under the RAC granting process. Four muralists came to us, including Joe, and worked in conjunction with our membership. They designed and then painted, the beautiful work of art that is visible to motorists, pedestrians, bicyclists on Northeast 20th moving northbound. Not surprisingly, it has a musical theme. And I have to tell you that our members took great interest in making sure that the muralists got all the instruments and how they were held right. And the muralists were very patient with us as we dealt with our members on that. But it's a beautiful mural that depicts four different separate scenes, each done by a separate muralist, with different images and groupings of musicians from different cultural backgrounds. It's a beautiful mural if you haven't seen it. These muralists were able to take an ordinary, ugly wall that was tagged on a regular basis, a constant source of frustration for us, and turn it into a work of art. It's been there for over 3 years, has never been tagged. The rest of the building continues to be tagged, continues to be a nuisance in that way. This has never happened. I can only assume that even the taggers recognize it as a work of art. They stay away from it. Just want to say that I'm here to support the proposal. I support the work that the muralists have done. There's no doubt in my mind that these are a positive addition to our neighborhoods, and that anything that facilitates this process is a step in the right direction.
Thank you, sir. Ma'am?
My name is Joanne Oleksiak, and I have coordinated an informal network of artists that work under the name Portland Mural Defense, and I'm speaking on behalf both for myself and those that can't be here today. I do support the Original Art Murals Project, and I'm looking forward to commissioners passing that today. I want to address a couple points, though. One of them goes back to a question that Commissioner Leonard raised, and I think several other members of the council. Why do we care about this? Speaking for myself, one of the really important overriding issues comes down to a question of speech, and specifically, who can speak in public? And in our city, we have an overwhelming number of signs. We have a lack of public art. And so a big reason why this is even coming before you is not simply because a lot of us would really like to paint murals, but the larger issue of correcting an imbalance that has existed for decades in Portland, where sign companies and advertisers with impunity could place their billboards on the sidewalk level in a neighborhood where I have to walk by it every day. And yet, we don't have that same access to beautiful public art the way other cities do. So hopefully today, we will begin a process of undoing that trend in the commercial direction and enhance a flowering of public art. The other points I wanted to mention is a little bit of a qualification, and I do hope that you pass it with the proviso that non-contributing buildings in historic districts will be available for painting. Joe mentioned the example of the Richard Haas mural. I think it's a perfect example. Also, the 20-foot setback restriction, I hope that you will reconsider that in the central city area. But specifically, the idea of the permit fees, $250 flat fee, or in a design zone, that would go up to $400, could really be a prohibitive amount of money for a small grassroots organization. So I would suggest that there be either a waiver or possibly a sliding scale for grassroots organizations.
Those are good suggestions, and I recall that meeting over a decade ago at the Oregon Art Institute, and in addition to Joe, you were there too. And so thank you for your persistence and constantly contributing improvements to our existing sort of thoughts of the time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next three are Robin Corbo, Kathy Oliver, and Art DeMuro.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for waiting. I think you probably all know you have 3 minutes, and that countdown clock in front of you helps you mind the time. Why don't you begin?
Okay. Hi, my name is Robin Corbo. Thank you so much for having us here today. This is an issue that I am particularly passionate about, for I am a muralist. And with the support through the Regional Arts and Cultural Council, I've had the ability to bring forth two murals into Portland and have another one on the way. One of the things about this regulation, of which is coming forth, really opens it up to past having individuals work in a community setting rather than going before the city to put up art. I think it's really important for people to have the ability to not have their art regulated in a way of before a panel, but among the community members who are going to be bearing witness to it. I am, as an artist, one of the murals that I've done is on 17th and Alberta. It's a mural that's about 28 and a half feet tall. And I believe that one of the reasons why we don't have murals that are much taller is that we've had somewhat of a mural moratorium for a long time. It really suppressed the mural culture within Portland. I think that had that not been there, you would see murals that would be much taller. After spending a lot of time in Philadelphia and in San Francisco and seeing other pictures throughout the world, large art has a spectacular impact in a very positive way in neighborhoods. And so that's something that I feel very strongly about, is absolutely passing this resolution, but looking towards ways not so much to limit the size or the materials that can be on there, but to really provide more of an opportunity to expand upon it. I think that the public art would do great, great things for Portland. As we heard earlier, testimony that it really does deter blight in a way, in a very strong, positive way. I've never had a mural of mine that was intact be tagged. Also, as we're looking at ways of generating money within Portland and with our current energy crisis looming, people are wanting to stay in local areas. When you have a lot of art in areas, it really brings in many people to want to see it. And I think that as we have more and more art here, it's going to bring more people to Portland. I think that is going to serve to bring more attention to the businesses that display it, even if it's specifically if it's not a sign. I think that it does a lot of things to bring people into a neighborhood that perhaps would not feel as compelled to take, you know, two looks at it. And just as a muralist working on scaffolding, I've been able to show people how art is made. That is an incredible process that if you're not an artist, you might not be privy to. People honk. People give me the thumbs up. People want more murals. And I hear it over and over again, why don't we have more? We had a wonderful PowerPoint that explained it today, and now we have the opportunity to change that. Please pass this.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Ms. Oliver.
Hi. My name's Kathy Oliver, and I'm the director of Outside In. And I'm here today for two reasons. One, I am a big fan of public art. I believe it's important. It makes the city a more exciting, livable place to live and to work. But secondly, murals have been an important part of Outside In's history. 7 years ago, when we built the new facility, it was important to us that the building be non-institutional, that it attract our clients and be a cheerful place for them. And our clients are primarily homeless youth. We used murals to try to accomplish that goal. We commissioned a local artist, and he painted a three-story art panel that we hung off the front of the building. We also commissioned five local artists to paint five mural panels that we incorporated into a fence at the sidewalk level. And the murals did accomplish the goal that we had hoped. The clients love the building. The building also won 10 design awards, one from the governor and one from the National Institute of Architects. So it's been successful on many levels, and it's because we were able to use murals. So again, I also urge you to support the recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. DeMuro.
Good afternoon, Art DeMuro, Chairman of the Landmarks Commission. The Landmarks Commission strongly advises against allowing such murals to impact historic districts. Obviously, a mural on a National Register property would be a significant alteration to an original historic design. Equally clear is that a mural in a protected historic district could be a visual intrusion. It would likely violate historic design review guidelines regulating that district.
Review of new construction within a designated district is within the jurisdiction of the Landmarks Commission because such new elements require oversight to ensure compatibility of design, scale, and other visual traits. New murals could present a threat to such compatibility as well. I want to emphasize here that in a historic district, it is the district that is the resource. So that it's really a false differentiation to differentiate between contributing buildings and non